and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I am Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is having some serious feedback. Anyway, True Wealth is your is sponsored by Coins Plus. Coins Plus is your full service rare coin and precious metals broker dealer depository service. Been doing business since the 90s. Housed in probably, maybe try not to be too arrogant, but honestly believe we operate from one of the finest facilities in the nation, becoming more and more true as time goes on. Actually, probably pretty accurate. Everything is internet-based now. Everything is internet-based now. It scares me, okay? We had a crash lately of a company called Republic Metals. Huge refiner, okay? I mean, huge. Their bankruptcy was substantial. I don't understand sometimes these bankruptcies at all because they refined your metal. But over time, one thing I've noticed in this business is the sizable companies, that's not true. Because when a small guy goes down, you really don't notice, right? You don't notice and you don't care. It's when the big boys crash that everybody feels it. Everybody, at least in our industry, loses money. And so that's not fair. We've been around through thick and thin for many moons. We've seen markets come. We've seen markets go. We've been fair and honest. It's been our goal throughout time and history. You guys have heard all this, maybe not. But we do consider ourselves Christian-owned and operated. Honesty, integrity, and professionalism in every transaction is our motto. Okay, we seek it. I mean, it's important. We'll treat you good. That's what we want to do. I've mentioned in the past, I don't know how many times, but I'll mention it again. If you want a free silver dollar, and I'm always baffled. Okay, whatever. I was going to get sarcastic. I don't know why you wouldn't want a free silver dollar, right? Okay, so if you want a free silver dollar, all you got to do is go on Google. Let's see something here. Let's see. Well, I won't look that up right now. See, that's one thing that's really frustrating. I do this show by myself, and there's times that there'll be like these long pauses. I had a complaint again the other day. And when you guys try to talk and do a Google search at the same time, it's one thing to talk and write. Okay. Cause you don't care, but then Google search it, and then, cause when you search it, you gotta look up, you gotta go through all kinds of stuff. You're looking for a needle in a haystack sometimes. And Google does everything in their power. Google's job isn't to help you find the information you want. Google's job is to make money. And I actually hate it and I'm sick of it. They want you clicking and baiting and, going all over the place. Because the more you click around, the more money they make. And times have changed. And huge. Oh, great. My phone just started ringing, by golly. That I did not appreciate, so I will shut that bad boy off. It was supposed to be off. But anyhow, when you're looking on Google, you are not getting what I would consider organic information. You're not getting the true, purest, best of information. You're getting whoever paid for that ad or that information to be slung at you at that point in time. One of the major bullion coin companies in this industry. Pretty easy to figure out if you do a web search, because their name's everywhere. They spend, according to an employee, far more than an employee for the company, pretty much the president, they spend $7 million a year just on Google Ads. Take a minute and process that. They spend $7 million. This is just a coin and bullion business that they're running. And they do, their volume is tremendous. It's absolutely astounding. And the guy, you know, he's made just horrendous amounts of money over the years. You know, he's got one of the most impressive exotic car collections in the United States. Everything from, multiple, Lamborghinis, Ferraris, Bugattis, whatever, Alfa Romeo, on down the list you can go. And what's the one that starts with an M? A McLaren's. And he's got all this stuff. He's made so much money. So obviously something's working right. And that's just not who Coins Plus is. I mean, we're just not set up that way. I'm not set up like a warehouse. I didn't build this business. I built this when I built my building, and I'll admit I made some mistakes. You guys like stories about, the one that got away. I could do a whole show on that. In fact, you want to hear a few, the one that got away? Okay, well, here's one. Back in about 96-ish, the internet, there was this scam going around the internet where guys would email a list of coins that was too good to be true. And then they would, they'd really milk a dealer in, because a dealer, getting a hold of some of these coins was astounding. And I had just missed, I had an employee who grew over time. He managed for me. He ended up having to be terminated for theft, which was super sad because, that's another story. But anyway, this guy sends me this list of coins that's too good to be true. And there was a lot of scams going on. So I saved the list as scam collection. Well, the guy gets a hold of me again like a week later. He goes, "Did you get my list?" Now, this is back in the 90s when nobody was on the web. I was getting contacted by law firms out of Texas, New Orleans, California. I was bidding on coins and paper money, rare paper money, that had been literally scanned on a fax machine, or really poor pictures, and I'm bidding on this stuff against the big boys, these huge companies that are far bigger than me, and I'm winning these bids, and I'm like, what is going on here? It was, I love coins. I will admit, God has blessed me. Oh, Lord, how have you blessed us? Thank you, Jesus, for blessing our business, blessing our family, blessing us all so grandly. I mean, this business has been so blessed. It's indescribable. I started it as a hobby because I loved coins, and I really was tired of corporate America. God, as part of, something to think about. We pray for ourselves a lot, right? I mean, isn't that kind of sad, but it's true. We always pray for ourselves, right? And so many times God will send something else to get us to where we need to go. He'll send somebody for us to serve, and then he may, and that person in time may lead us to the person we need to meet or whatever. So, anyway, this guy, he keeps working me, and He's from the Long Beach, California area. Now, remember, if you just tuned in, you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, the host. And I'm just telling a one that got away story. And I've got a few more. And I've got a lot. I've got stuff that got away that just, you know, that it's kind of frustrating because I just didn't have the knowledge. So this guy lives supposedly in the Long Beach area, and I'm calling him out. I'm like, okay, fine. I got nothing to lose. I'll play this guy's game. I'm convinced that I'm being put together. The coins were too nice. This stuff was too good. It was just too good to be true, and especially to just be randomly shot at me from the internet, and the guy likes me and wants to connect with me. And we had a pretty respectable website for the time. Since then, we've had, you know, various issues with our website. We've had website design issues. You just can't even believe what I've been through on the website end of things. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable what I've been through. So I said to this guy, well, ironically, I'm going to be in the Long Beach area next week, which I was. Okay? And I said, let's get together and I'll look at this collection. And I'll try to speed it up. So I get together with this guy. And the first night I go through the collection and it's there. And it's nice. I mean, it's something special. And, you know, of course, his dad had built it over the years, you know, from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s or whatever. And, you know, the profit margins, he's got records of what he paid for everything. And the profit margins they're just astounding. And I always love that. I just love it. I love to see the amount of money people make on coins over the long haul when they buy the right material. And what's crazy is who makes the most money on coins? The answer is the collector. It's not the investor. It's the collector. What does the investor do? The investor tries to go find something that he can buy cheap, and he gets a billion of them, and, you know, it's just, and that's what companies, you know, your Gold Lines and Roslyn Capitals and Swiss Americas and all these people you see on the internet, they're selling you stuff that they can get their hands on as many as they ever dreamt, okay? So they'll be pushing a product, and if you literally call them with $1 million, they can access $1 million worth of this stuff. Well, real true collector's coins or collectible coins, they're not like that. They're very hard to locate, and they're a lot of work. And that's what's fun for collectors is they look and they hunt and they peck. And back then, it was the coin show days. So I go through this guy's collection, and I give him a bid. And it's substantial. I mean, it's well into the, what would you call it, six figures. And this is in, like, 96 or 98. I mean, and no gold. That's unheard of. That was... You know, you take those coins now, multiply them times 10 at least, because the average coin that was in that collection has gone up at least 10 times or tenfold. You remove, you know, the fact that there was no gold, so he didn't get any appreciation out of gold over time. And then you've got basically coins that have gone up tenfold, and I'm offering them about $250,000 or $260,000. In 96 or 98, by today's standards, those coins are worth well over $2 million, which, as a side note, is why we recommend a balanced portfolio. We are in a lull on coins. We're just kind of in a holding pattern, and it's not just coins, folks. It's what's really going on with the economy and what Trump tells us is going on and what the media tells us is going on and what the consumer price index tells us is going on. It's all not true. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. So the guy calls me. So he's going to get bids from Heritage and Spectrum. And I mean, all the big, big boys. I'm not overly knowledgeable at the time, but these are the king of kings that I'm bidding against. And I'm like, well, there's no way I can bid against these guys. So I thought. So he calls me back and he says, well, can we meet tonight again? He goes, you have the high bid and I want to sell you my dad's collection. And I'm like, well, of course we can. Let's meet in my room again. And so we meet, and, you know, and I trusted the guy. I don't remember. I'm sure I went back through, you know, masses of what I'd gone through. But you do over time. I got put together one time pretty bad by a guy out of Missoula where I had bid on a collection. And by the time I went to pick it up, he had, you know, removed a bunch of the good coins and, you know, and we had it all boxed up. And he put me together. And then when I called him, he goes, well, that was fair, you know, and you didn't pay enough for this or that, or, you know, and it's like, well, if you make a deal, you make a deal, right? Okay. So here's the deal. So I get together with this guy and I buy all this stuff. And then he has this other huge backpack. And he pulls out these stacks of three-ring binders that are like 4 or 5 inches thick. Huge. They're huge. And they are so stuffed with paper, and it is random-sized paper like you have never seen. Just everything. And they're all doodles and sketches and scratch, you know, drawings and all this Disney stuff. And he says, are you at all interested in this? And I said, what is it? And I'm telling you, this stuff, these binders are stacked 2 feet high. Or, you know, maybe I'm exaggerating. Say 1.5 feet high, whatever. He's got this huge duffel backpack. And I said, what are they? And he said, well, my father was the original animator of Disney. And I said, yeah, right. And he goes, no, seriously. And he said he was the head animator. And I said, well, what was his name? Like, that's going to matter, right? Yeah. Well, I didn't know anything about Disney stuff, really. I knew it was collectible, and that's all I knew. And he tells me the guy's name, and it's some crazy, like, Norwegian name. And I said, well, I'm thinking, that doesn't sound right. Well, what difference does it make what his name sounds like? So I said, well, you know, I said, how much do you want? He said, $25,000. So, you know, I'm pretty new to the business, and I'm like, this guy's like, you know, he's offering me this stuff, $25,000. And I'm like, that's a huge risk. I mean, it's so far beyond my wildest dreams. And I said, no, I'm going to have to pass. I'm sorry. I wish I could, but I just have no clue at all. And so, you know, obviously that's stuck in my head, and I'm sorry that I'm dragging the story out too long. And so I came home, you know, at the time you couldn't get internet in the hotel rooms in the 90s. And I didn't have, you know, even your computers would struggle, and you know what it was like. It was just a different time. So you couldn't really do fast on the spot searches. And I can't remember if his name was like Ollie Nordgren or I don't even know. It was some Norwegian name, Ollie Johnson or something like that. And, so I passed, and so I went home, and I started to look around, and I started to watch eBay. Well, first, I saw this little tiny card, you know, half the size of a postcard, selling an eBay auction for $400, and it's just a doodle from this animator of Disney. And then I see another one go for $800, and then I see another one go for $1,000, and I'm like, oh, wow. So I get a hold of the guy, and I said, "Hey, I've done a little research, and I said I know a little more about the stuff. I said I feel pretty comfortable making a deal on that stuff, you know." And he says, "Well, you know," he goes, "I've been selling them on eBay. So guess what? These little cards that I've been watching going on eBay for crazy money. And you got to remember." This guy had, you know, 50 pounds of this stuff and everything from every Fantasia and Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse and all hand-drawn and the little books that you used to flip and they'd move. And I mean, oh my gosh, right? Just the unbelievable stuff. And so he said, and then he names some guy that I didn't know who he was. He names a guy who saw it on eBay and said he was going to put it in his own auction because this guy specializes in Disney material. And he said, and so-and-so McManus or whatever his name was, he said he's putting this stuff in his auction. He's convinced me to auction it off through him. And so I said, oh, okay. Well, I said, will you do me a favor? Now, remember, he offered me this stuff for $25,000. I knew nothing about it. Will you do me a favor? I said, when you're done with the auction, will you let me know kind of how you did? I'm curious. Well, he goes, yeah. He said, the problem is, he said, for the first auction, I'm giving him, you know, he goes, if you remember the binders, and he explains what he's giving him. But the really, 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 really good stuff he was keeping. Well, he gets back to me and he says that that first portion brought like $1.86 million. And he kept the best of the best of the best. Well, since then I've watched some of these pieces I've passed on have the good stuff that he kept. He got framed over time, you know, and people, when it first hit the market, no one was ready for it because the guy had died, I think, literally like back in the 80s or something. And his son was, you know, his son was well-aged. I mean, this is back in the 90s, and his son was probably in his 60s or 70s or something. And he had hung on to this, and then he began to have these special pieces framed, you know, like when his dad invented characters that became incredibly famous, and he was getting $7,000 and $10,000 and $12,000 and there are certain pieces, and I don't remember what they were, that have, you know, that have brought in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, but you got to remember, first of all, our business is not buying stuff that, you know, that we don't know anything about and trying to make a fortune on it. There's so many people that ask me all the time, hey, you know, how often do you, like, buy a collection and then go through it and find all these really rare coins you didn't know were there? The answer is never. Well, how can that be? Because we're professional, first of all, and we have ethics. But we go through, when we buy a collection, we go through it. We know what's in it, everything. We look at everything. And in fact, I will be honest with you, I actually intentionally slow down my pace of reviewing coins in a lot of cases. Because people cannot believe that I can go through stuff so fast, see everything that's there, and add it up. They just they can't believe it's possible because they don't know what they're looking at. On the other hand, people will inherit a bag of 90% U.S. silver. That means the bag was sold as silver. And then they'll spend, you know, however long, you know, building this huge a spreadsheet of a whole bunch of coins that were never meant to have any collectible value that are literally worth their silver value. We see this far too often where they just take so much time to go through this stuff. It's a waste. And then they bring it in and we put it all back together. We dump it all back together and we put it all in a bag and you know, and we weigh it and run it through the counter and we buy it as silver and sell it as silver. And they just had finished spending some unbelievable amount of time, you know, cataloging it. And that's why when people call, we say, don't waste your time cataloging it. However your father or grandfather or whoever kept it, just leave it that way intact and we'll go through it for a very good reason, etc. and so forth. And, you know, we see people spend just these tremendous hours because they think they're becoming an expert by listing stuff out. They think that it's going to make it worth more. And you have to understand money. I mean, folks, they make so much money every year. Not only that, what do they make? 5-6 quarters a year? I mean, folks, they literally make enough. They make billions of each type 5 or 6 times a year. Billions, okay? And there's so many coins out there, you can't even believe it. Coins are not rare. Rare coins are rare. Well, age does not dictate rarity. Mintage, supply, and demand dictates rarity and desirability. It has nothing to do with how old the coin is. You can buy Roman coins that are 2,000 years old, you know, not in the greatest shape at all, but for a few bucks. True story, 2,000-year-old coins. You can buy coins that were minted in 1995 for $5,000 because the mintage was so low and the demand is high. Etc. So when we go through a collection, I mean, we know what we're looking at, and it's really, really hard for people to comprehend that we can have that knowledge. It is. And there's no other way to put it. And that's obviously after you've handled, you know, millions of silver dollars, a coin like a silver dollar has a date in a mint mark. The date's on the front, the mint mark's on the back. The mint mark, the date can make a difference. You know, there's a few dates that are worth good money, 1893, 1895. But the rest have different mint marks. They have Philadelphia, which is no mint mark, New Orleans, Carson City, and San Francisco. And then in 1921, they resurrected the Morgan Silver Dollar, and they added a D for the first time. And 1921 D Morgan dollars, they're not rare at all. Okay, and they're not rare at all. They're just very common. They melted a ton of coins down to make these. And so, you know, but I've gotten where I've handled so many silver dollars. To you, they all look alike. I can tell you by looking at the front what the mint mark is on the back. And it baffles people that I can do that, you know. So if I'm going through a collection and I'm looking at the front, and maybe not in a lot of cases looking at the back. The reason I'm not looking at the back is because the coin may be common. I can tell also just from experience if there's damage on the back of a coin a lot of times just by looking at the front, which blows people away. They're like, how did you know? You just went through 40 coins and all of a sudden you flipped over the only one that has damage on the back. I don't know how, just experience. You know, I've handled millions and millions of silver dollars. Silver dollars have always been my favorite. They've been my specialty. I grew up in Montana. Montana was the silver dollar capital of the world. People used to complain that they'd leave there with great big pockets full of silver dollars. They used to complain, you know, they didn't like it. Well, they should have hung on to a lot more of them, I'll tell you that. And, you know, over time, those old hoards, they've dried up. They've dried up considerably. So anyway, that's just a story of one that got away. I've got plenty more. I've had, you know, ambassadors offer me things. I mean, just I could go on and on. I won't. When I was building the building, I wanted to put in one of those huge Mosler vault doors. You guys have all seen them on TV or whatever. The big round doors that they used to use in the banks, and I mean big, like 7-8 feet around across, you know, and they're affixed to a massive, you know, like 3-foot thick metal, you know, frame, and they're absolutely gorgeous. When you open them, they're glass, and you can see all the movement inside, and they have titanium bolts, I guess. They're not bolts. What are they? The big thing that slides out that locks the vault. I wanted so badly in my building, but I couldn't get my neighbor who wanted this land so bad. He went way, way, way out of his way to make it very, very difficult for us to build. I mean, he had a junky old rickety fence behind us that was next to a house that he owned that he rented out. He owned all the property around us. The property owners of the property where we're located tried to sell to this man for about 10 years. The family that we bought the property from before we built had started accumulating commercial real estate in 1946. They had never sold one piece ever. I had decided that it was time to move. We had severely outgrown our position at Pounder's Jewelry. And I had tried to talk to some commercial realtors, and they automatically said, you don't have enough money. You know, you need this, you need X amount of money to put down, and you don't have it. They never asked. They told me, I don't have it. And they were, their behavior, they were very arrogant and whatnot. And so I prayed that God would lead me to somebody, and sure enough, guess what? Within a week, here comes a guy. He spends $50,000 on gold, and I start talking to him. He's a realtor, claims to be a Christian. After dealing with him for a couple years, it's a long story. He didn't treat me the best, but all of a sudden I kept saying, I want to move. I need to lease a space. I need to do it quickly, and please help me to do it. And he says, sure, I will. And I said, I need someone with ethics and integrity. So he basically starts looking, and I keep calling him, what about this building? What about that building? What about this building? He's like, no, you don't want that. It's in a bad part of town. This building isn't right. And he's absolutely protecting me, which is good, which I wanted. And then all of a sudden he calls me up, and this is within weeks of me getting a hold of this guy. He goes, you're not even going to believe this. He goes, that piece of property right out in front of Pounder's Jewelry that has a car wash on it and a billboard, which I probably should have kept. He said, that's coming up for sale on Monday. And this was Friday. And he said, this family has never sold property, but there was two families that owned this corporation. They'd had a couple deaths. They were going to have to liquidate a number of properties to pay the taxes. He says, this is coming up Monday. Today's Friday. You need to decide right now, do you want it or do you not? Because it's going to get listed on Monday. He said, as soon as it's listed, Harlan Douglas is going to buy it. Harlan Douglas was the number and still is the number one taxpayer in Spokane County. He owns more real estate than anybody in Spokane County. And he would accumulate everything. In fact, while I was building my building, he called me and offered me $1 million profit. And I said, no, thank you. God gave it to me. I want to keep it. And this was before the building was finished. He offered me $1 million profit. That's how bad he wanted the property. And this realtor told me this would be the case. And so actually, you know what? It was a Thursday, not a Friday, but he said, you're going to need to know right away. So my wife and I said, we got to pray about it. And so I went home. I told my wife about it. We prayed that night before we went to bed. I said, Lord, please let us know first thing in the morning whether or not we should buy this property. It was very expensive at the time, very expensive and more than I'd ever paid for anything. That's for sure. And we both looked at each other. We got done praying, and we both looked at each other and said, it's not right, is it? And we both said, no, it's not right. It's not going to happen. It's not meant to be. It's too much money. So that's how we went to bed. We woke up in the morning early, both of us. I was laying there looking at the ceiling. God woke me up pretty early, earlier than he should have. And I look over at my wife, and she's doing the same thing. She's laying there looking at the ceiling. And I looked at her, and I said, we're supposed to buy it, aren't we? And she said, yes, we are. And it was so cool how God had just changed both of our hearts. Boom, right there on the spot. My wife and I, anytime we give, if someone wants money for a cause, we will both decide. In other words, we'll both pray about it. And then we'll see what God tells us. And then we come back together and we compare our numbers. I would say 98% of the time, God gives us the same number. The other 2%, it's two numbers to choose from. But at no time have we ever been off, and that's just how God works. So I bought this property, overbuilt the building. I spent a year trying to build the building. This realtor I was dealing with had hooked me up with an architect who was working out of his house. He was very, 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 very incompetent. But this realtor who I was dealing with, he had built, he owned so many strip malls. He just would duplicate the same design over and over and over. And he just needed an architect to stamp off on all this stuff. And so he liked this guy because this guy was hands down the cheapest there was. And I tried to get him design, and I'm a natural designer. I have a real strong background in architecture and interior design, and I just, you know, I was having the hardest time. He couldn't, he had no creativity whatsoever, not to mention the fact that I probably wanted to do it a little overkill. And so I spent a year with the guy. Finally, I hooked up with a builder who I'd known, who was an individual. You know, looking back, God told me clearly who to use. It was a large company. I mean, God made it crystal clear, and I didn't listen, and I went with a private individual, and it was the nicest building he'd ever built. And it posed and presented just a tremendous number of challenges, but that's okay. That's the way God works. That's how we learn a lot of lessons. And so we built the building, and then I really went crazy with the security end of it. Our Coins Plus end of the building. And by the way, I tried with all my might to get this little piece of land behind. The Coins Plus section of our building protrudes out towards Division. I'd gone down to the city time and time again and asked if there was any code zoning changes coming. The lady said, no, 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 don't worry about it. I go into my first city council meeting. Number one, this neighbor is who was opposed to us building, who had the fence. This rickety fence had encroached our property, starting at 3 feet on one end, 8 feet on the other of the back of our property. The title company and realtor are like, you got to clear this up before you close this deal. I said, I'm not going to have a problem with this guy. He claims to be a Christian, and he knows it's not his land. I mean, it's not even fair. It's not his land. It won't be a problem. The fence is a piece of junk anyway. So he, you know, so I go ahead and close on the loan. And then I go to him and he's angry that he didn't get the land. They offered the land to him over and over again. He's the kind of guy, if he can't trade you for swampland under a bridge, he just doesn't want to do a deal. He just doesn't want to pay straight up what something's worth. It's just his nature. He's a junk millionaire. He's got more junk than you've ever seen. Stocked or hoarded and piled in stockyards all over Spokane. Just unbelievable. So he's very unhappy. And then I approach him later and I'm like, look, there's this huge chunk of, not huge, it was 30 feet wide and maybe 50 feet long. Pretty small. But the frontage of Division at the time was worth about $25 a foot, I think, or 20 something. And I offered him for a 30 by 50 foot of property that was behind my building that could never be seen and never used. I offered him for like $55,000, which is unheard of. It was unheard of at the time, but I knew the man, you know, it's kind of like the parable of talents where the guy with the one talent says to God or to the master, well, I knew you reaped where you didn't sow and that you basically make money where you don't deserve it and on it goes. And I just was like, okay, Lord, I'm going to trust you. I am not going to fight and get into a lawsuit. One of this guy's employees came to me one day and said, Kevin, you wouldn't believe what I just saw. He goes, I can't even believe it. I'd seen this guy up here wandering around my land after I'd bought it, digging around, kicking the dirt, and he found the property marker pen from an old survey, and he actually removed it, which is so illegal. Plus, you know, there's verses all over about moving the boundary lines of your founding of your fathers and, you know, just what a sin it was. But he did that. And so basically his junky fence encroached on my property and I accepted it. There was another architect who was a customer of ours, who Glenn Cloninger. I kept begging him to help me. And he said, I don't want to step on another architect's toes. I said, this other architect's not helping me out. And I showed him where I'd already designed the building. I had it designed. Unfortunately, I'd been convinced that you should maximize, put the biggest possible building on the property for rents and whatnot. And I overdid that. And this other person that owned the land behind me, they would not let it go for the life of them. It wasn't being used for anything. They said their architect told them they needed to hang on to it for their future project So my architect, Glenn Cloninger at the time, called the other architect. The other architect said, look, I never heard a thing about it. I don't know anything about it. I see no need for them to have it, and he should sell it to you without any problem. So I went back to him and said, hey, we spoke with your architect. They said everything should be fine. His answer was, I don't care. I don't want to sell you the property. And it would have really changed the building. How'd this start? The way it started was I had found one of these huge doors, massive Mosler doors. They're antique. This one was as in mint condition as they come. They're usually about 30 inches thick or better. Most beautiful works of art you've ever seen. You know, you've got all the internal movements, the massive bolts I keep forgetting the term, but, you know, that lock the vault. Just a magnificent piece of art. They wanted $75,000 plus transport, which would have been another $75,000, $150,000. I wanted to put this vault door in so that the clientele could see it. I wanted to put it behind bullet and bomb-resistant polycarbonate, so people could go in and out of their safe deposit boxes and yet still be safe. And, you know, this guy wouldn't budge on the land and so forth and so on. So I built a whole nother vault system, all still class two modular vaults, just phenomenal vaults. I mean, the floor of our vaults were poured concrete with steel. They put little 4-inch blocks and then they put 1-inch rebar grids and then another 4-inch concrete block. And another grid of metal, and on and on and on it went for 5 feet. And then they filled it with concrete. I mean, you could never dig or cut your way through that if you had to. There's no one that could. And we did that. We found a vault in Seattle. They were tearing down from 1882. Class 2 back then was 1 inch thick of T1 tour-resistant plate steel. We wrapped both of our vaults, the vault that we use personally, in our sorting room, and the vault that we use for our depository service is a class 2 vault that comes in modular panels that can only be put together with like a crane, where they crane one piece. These huge metal sleeves are poured into the sides. One slides over the next one slides over that, side to side. Hard to explain, but I think you know what I mean, maybe. So we build these vaults. I get this class 2 steel, inch thick of T1 tour-resistant plate steel. So strong and thick, you wouldn't even believe it. 90 pounds per square foot. They used a plasma cutter to cut it. It was the ugliest edges you've ever seen. Just a mess, it looked like. But they wrapped the vaults in this stuff. And there was a piece left out back that was about 2.5 feet long by 1.5 feet wide. I couldn't move that for months. It weighed approximately, I'm trying to think, let's see, there would have been 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5, at least 4 to 5 square feet. At 90 pounds per square foot, it weighed anywhere from 360 to 450 pounds, and it was just a big piece of metal laying there. You wouldn't even believe it. You couldn't pick it up for the life of you. Finally, a good friend of mine said, hey, next time I drive by, I got my forklift or whatever, I'll pick it up, or backhoe or whatever he used, I didn't know. He came by, he was an excavator, he just went, picked a piece of metal up, put it in the back of his truck, and took off. So I was finally able to get rid of it. But we went through a lot, and then finally what happened was, when we got bids, there used to be the Spokane Regional Planning Center, where you just dump your plans off. Everybody, you know, anybody could bid on any portion of it they wanted. So the second lowest bid was the son of this guy who wanted the land, who said, I will do everything I can to stop it. He tried to put injunctions against me. He did everything. He didn't handle it right. He claims to be a Christian. The whole family does. And it was just a bad situation. I mean, it just was sad. We'll just say that. And his son had the second lowest bid. The lowest bid was junk. It was written by a Russian guy. It was scribbled on a yellow legal notepad. It was really just a mess. And this guy's son was the second lowest bid. And I thought, well, maybe I'm getting put together. The contractor we were using said, you definitely don't want to use him. And I said, no, you know what? Let me pray about it. So I prayed about it, and God said, use him. because he said, who's that guy going to sue? His own son? You know, and I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. So I used him. And he asked my contractor to meet me. I met him a couple weeks after we agreed to use him. And then the project began a few weeks later. The very first thing I told this guy, I said, you would not believe what I've been through on this fence. He goes, oh, trust me. I know. I have heard nothing but, you know, every Thanksgiving, every Christmas. He goes, this is what I hear about. He goes, I'm tired of it. He said, it's your land. You do what you want with your land. He has no right to take it from you, etc. This is his son. This is the one son of the family. The other sons really sucked up to the guy because they all wanted a piece of the action of the business. They all wanted to manage. They wanted to lead. The owner of the business did some pretty cruel things to his kids. One of his kids went and got a job in sales with a company that this jewelry store, it was their number one source for jewelry. As soon as this son went to work for this company, the father of this family instantly cut off his relationship with this company, putting this his son in a terrible position, making him look bad, causing him all kinds of harm. You know, just very, that's just the kind of people they are. When we were inside of their store, everybody got judged by how much money they had, and they'd come to me and say, why are you spending time with them? They don't have money. Or they'd come to me and say, oh, you really need to spend time with them. They have a lot of money. And I finally said, look, don't ever do that to me again. I do not ever want to judge a person by how much money they do or do not have. That is not Christian, it's not ethical, and it doesn't fit into my belief system. And, you know, they rearranged the showcases and everything to just try to hinder my success because they had put other people in the spot we were in, and it was back in kind of a dark hole. And God blessed us. And we ran a lot of ads that said inside, you know, blank, blank jewelry. And we put them on the map when people would call. We'd tell them where they are, give them directions. And then that company rearranged their showcases and everything to drive people to their counter. I had an agreement with him that he does not do anything with coins and I will not do anything with jewelry. Well, he, after a short period of time, he started buying coins and all he would do, I mean, he bought some of the rarest coins you would even imagine. And all he would do, they'd be gold. He'd just put them on a scale and buy them for half of their gold content. He didn't know what he was doing. He didn't care, but it was just his nature. And so it was very refreshing once I moved and I was able to start buying jewelry. Before that, I just, you know, it was very rare that I would ever buy jewelry, etc. And his son, the very first thing his son did is he got out his bulldozer. He drove over that fence immediately. My attorney said, do not touch that fence. He said, if you touch that fence, you'll start a lawsuit, you know, and blah, blah, blah. The guy's claiming adverse possession and so on. Well, I wouldn't touch the fence. And the son immediately drove over the fence. The father came running up. They got into a big altercation. The son, the father was, who's the grandfather, whatever, very small man. Very, very small man. And he has one son that's a very large man. And that son got off the bulldozer, lectured him. I watched from a distance, from afar. And the father walked away with his head down, you know. And the son had told him, look, it's not your land. What you're doing is wrong. The son told me, he goes, you go get your building corrected to fit the original lot that you're supposed to have. I was working with the city. They had all these new zoning requirements. They wanted all these plants and trees, and it was too much, and I negotiated it down to half and whatnot. But you just never know. Like I've said, in business with Christians, you just got to be careful. Just because they have that Christian badge doesn't mean anything. It just really doesn't mean anything. In fact, sometimes it can be worse because they use it to drop your defenses. The Christian audience, I say, is a very vulnerable audience. These people will prey on the vulnerability of your Christianity, assuming, well, you're a Christian, I'm a Christian, so we have equal beliefs and faith and ethics, and I can trust you. And when you deal with a Christian, you do want to be cautious and careful. You want to go with your gut. You have the Holy Spirit that lives within you. If, for example, say you wanted to buy a bunch of gold, and you come in here and you work with us, the Holy Spirit will tell you, do you belong here or do you not? You know, you need to learn to listen to the Spirit, and you need to do what's right all the time. That is very, very important to me. It's a huge part of who I am and what I believe in, and I'm just a firm believer. I fear God. You know, I really fear God, and I believe he can do what he wants, when he wants, where he wants, and how he wants, and I have a funny feeling that you probably know that as well, that God is God, and you don't mess with God, and God made precious metals an investment. He made it money. It lasts forever. He says it lasts all the way until the end. Till people cast it in the street on the day of wrath. And then what does he do? He covers heaven in, and he gave it to Christ as his first gift. And on I can go. Precious metals are the true form of wealth. That's why the name of the show is True Wealth. My one mistake I made, originally my business name was, believe it or not, Coins and Crystals, clear back in the 90s, because this guy had given me, you know, this suggestion, the same guy we're talking about, and I had this weird cursive logo that you couldn't read, and it was just bad, and I eventually went to Coins Plus. But the problem is, we deal in a lot of gold. I love gold. You know, gold's become a real strong part. It always has been. I just didn't know a lot about it, and I do wish our name had the word gold in it. So there, that's about that. I think what you want to know is that there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that God is always God. He always will be God, and he is the true God of the Bible. It doesn't matter what you believe. God is God, right? God is God, and you have to honor and respect him as God. Fear of God is everything, and it's so important that you fear God. The biblical term to fear God is to have to be in awe of him. In Ephesians 1, it talks about how He chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that he would be holy and blameless, that we would be holy and blameless before him in love. That blows my mind. He predestined us to adoption as sons through Jesus Christ to himself, according to the kind intention of his will, to the praise of the glory of his grace, which he freely bestowed on us in the beloved. In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses, and he goes on and on and on. Fear, you know, we need to honor and respect him as God. We need to fear him. Fear of him is the beginning of wisdom, and that is how we find, you know, that's how we truly honor and respect him, is we need to fear him. We need to honor him, and that's, you know, pretty simple. There's a lot of scripture about fearing God, and I think that word in our society has been twisted into a confusing, into a confusing use, we'll say. How about that? We don't necessarily understand that kind of fear, but we need to fear God. What Philippians 1:14, and that most of the brethren trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear. We're not to have fear of man. We are to have fear of God. And that is, like I said, about as important as it gets. You know, he fear is a weird thing that he gave us, but we are not to fear anything but God. And fear means to be in awe of. It says, you know, work out your thing. The scriptures that just throw me for a loop. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Work out your salvation. Well, you know, a lot of people say, well, once saved, always saved, right? I mean, isn't that the deal? So keep that in. I mean, that's something, but now, you know, it's a confusing statement that we need to fear God in every way. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, it says in the Bible. And we need to honor him. We need to be in awe of him. And we do. I mean, that's, I think, you know, fearing God, being in awe of him is, you know, you can be a good person and all that, but if you're doing it for the wrong reason, you're really not accomplishing much at all. And it's something that I've kind of struggled with. I had a whole bunch of notes that are kind of a little bit sidetracked here, but trust in the Lord and do good. As you know, think about it. He says, trust in him and do good. So he wants us to do good works. As you know, we need to help others. As we help others, God will help us. Sow a seed in your time of need. If you need something, don't just pray for yourself. Sow seeds. Go out. Help others. If you're depressed, if you're afraid, go out. Sow a seed in your time of need. So often, being good to others is the secret to your own prayers being answered. And a lot of times, God will send a need when we're praying for ourselves that serves as the seed to lead us to our need. This is like a rhyme, almost like a rap, huh? But as us, you know, but it has us help others and grow in areas that we need before he answers our prayer. God knows our needs. He knows our weaknesses. He knows our strengths, and he knows we need to pray for others. And that's how he grows. There's so many times we want something. Hey, here we are. End of the show. End of the week. Take care. Gosh darn it, I hate that. Take care. God bless. I love you. Bye-bye.